adjourn.
Very good afternoon. My name is Arnold Franken, and as Jeremy said, I work at the other side of Cranfield University up in beautiful Bedfordshire in the cabbage fields. And even worse, I work at the Dark Force, i.e. the School of Management. Just in case, for some actually my background is mechanical engineering. How I got into this field is a different story. I'm not going to talk about that today. I'm going to talk about wargaming in business. Just one step back. When you're deeply interested in something, and undoubtedly you've noticed that all of a sudden you start to see supporting evidence everywhere. Yeah, so for example, if you're interested in a particular car, so if you think about replacing your current one and you look for a new one, all of a sudden you see the same model parked in every street corner. Before you didn't. Even this morning when I stepped out of my house and on my way to the train station, I noticed that my neighbor who drives a Volkswagen Beetle was missing on the driver's side the wheel hub. Now, I know she can't drive to save her life, so in a way, initially when I saw that, it didn't surprise me. But in just a 10-minute walk to the station, I noticed four other cars that were also missing the wheel hub on the driver's side. I thought, what's happening here? And even got me worrying about my own car. It was all the cars that had been in Atari that were Volkswagens, and I drive one, although not a Beetle. But it was too far away from the station or from my house to go back. Of course, the same thing happens with wargaming. When you're interested in wargaming, then before you know it, you start to find and meet other people who are also interested in wargaming. And then often it's only a tiny mental leap to make the assumption, well, I am interested in wargaming, and therefore everyone is interested in wargaming. But is that true? Now, a couple of weeks ago, in preparation for this conference, it kind of became clear that the number of people from business in the audience would be fairly limited in comparison to those from the military. And when we look even further, the number of, say, relative number of professional wargamers in business, it's practically negligible. Yeah, it's like trying to find gold dust. And a couple of years ago, A.T. Kearney, a big management consultancy company, did some research into the use of strategic gaming techniques. And what I'm showing here in particular is the use of wargaming in business. And what they found out through their survey was that only 17% of the respondents used wargaming on an occasional basis. But practically no one used it as kind of an integral part of their decision-making processes. Now, when you now start to look at, say, some of the leading business schools, and you start to look at what they teach during the MBAs, then you find that practically none of them talk about wargaming. If you're lucky, they'll talk about scenario planning, which is kind of derived from wargaming and the Kriegsspiel. And it receives a little bit of attention during the strategic management lectures, but it's not exactly practice. So perhaps some are familiar with scenario planning, or sometimes the shell method, as it's called, but wargaming isn't really spoken about. Now, interestingly, or perhaps ironically, wargaming couldn't be more valuable and useful for business these days. More and more companies start to realize that the environments in which they operate are very complex, they're very dynamic, and they're chock full of uncertainty. And they also start to notice that all the linear and rational and command and control type approaches that they've been familiar with for close to 100 years, if not more, are becoming increasingly more and more ineffective. Their tools and techniques can help them make sense of the future and then come up with decent decisions. And wargaming as a tool or an approach or even a way of thinking could deliver a massive amount of value. Also, when you look at how companies work these days, go back half a century or a century, pick a company like Ford, they would do everything in-house. Now, certainly Ford, they even had their own iron mines and coal mines. These days, not anymore. These days, a lot of activities are outsourced, and companies operate in partnerships and alliances. Now, when you start to operate in those kind of organizational forms, the problem or the challenge you now have is you can't always dictate to your partner what it is you want. They will be your equal. Now, in those cases, you can't just start to dictate it to them, but your challenge is still, we need to end up on the same page. Yeah, we need to be able to wrap our collective mind around problems and uncertainties, to develop a better understanding of them, collectively come up with creative solutions, so that at some point you end up with some kind of unity of effort in pursuit or in support of a shared purpose. Wargaming can help with that. That's what it's designed for. But in order to kind of unlock that value, wargaming as a concept needs to be able to cross this chasm. Yeah, more people need to know about it. Problem is, as I said, you know, hardly anyone in business knows about it, relatively speaking. There are people, obviously, that do know about it and often have a military background. But in general, people are not familiar with the concept of wargaming. So, kind of the inconvenient truth is, wargaming is an amazing concept. It's incredibly powerful. But unless sufficient number of people can be convinced of the benefits of the approach, it doesn't matter. It's not going to make a difference. Yeah, so to put it slightly bluntly, wargaming isn't on the radar of business in general. So how can we get it onto their radar? Yeah? We believe that it's a valuable approach. Now, in order to understand how you can get something on someone's radar, you need to understand how we as human beings go about adopting new ideas and concepts, regardless what they are. And we do this through these five steps. The first step is awareness. You need to be aware of what's out there. And following on from that, it leads to interest. Now we're going to evaluate it. When we've done that and we decided to accept it, we'll try it, and then we adopt it. And then, you know, when you've adopted it, then all of a sudden you start to seek and see the supporting evidence everywhere. Yeah, and that completes the loop. What I'm going to do in this talk is I'm only going to focus on the first three steps because they're the most critical to get right in order to get any idea or concept accepted. So the first step is awareness. Now what you need to understand here is that people can only see what they have seen before. So if we're going to introduce an unfamiliar concept like wargaming to them, we need to associate it with something that is familiar and comfortable for them, or else they won't pick it up. So essentially what we need to be able to do is say wargaming is like something else you're familiar with, but different. Yeah? And then we start to get some level of awareness with them. So what is it that people in business are familiar with? What is on their radar that we can use to our advantage to kind of, you know, spread the message and spread the love of wargaming? This is what's on their radar. Threats, challenges, opportunities, risks, all those kind of things. Essentially nothing unfamiliar when you work in the military. You've got the exact same thing. Just what comes before, the adjective is slightly different. Now when you look at how business people or even organizations deal with those kind of issues, you tend to see that one of the approaches they use is called risk management. And they'll use risk management at the strategic level, at the operational level, and at the project level. And if we were to briefly translate that back into military speak, it means they use it at the divisional, the brigade, and at the company level. Yeah? That's what they're doing. Now, last year, I did some work with Intercontinental Hotels Group, and I spoke with their senior vice president of global risk management, and he offered a very elegant description of the purpose of risk management. And he said the purpose of risk management is to champion and protect the company's trusted reputation in a competitive and risk-filled world. Now, if you now look and compare the purpose of risk management with the purpose of wargaming, you see that they're actually pretty much the same thing. In one way or another, using Graham's words from this morning, it's about saving lives. And in the case of IHG, it's about saving the life of the company, yeah, so that next year it will be there and it will be available for the next generation, and to make money, or at least avoid losing it. So if you look at it in this way, you can essentially start to sell wargaming as a risk management technique. Yeah, so now you can go to risk professionals and say, you know what, I've got another approach for you that offers you some interesting benefits. Yeah? And now you've got them on something that they're familiar with and that they care about. Which takes us to, So briefly going back, when you start to look and compare wargaming and risk management techniques and you look at what their aim is or their purpose, it's essentially about proactively trying to understand and then respond to emerging opportunities and risks. So that when you do take action, you can do it with greater peace of mind. Yeah? Now, if you now start to look at a company like Virgin Atlantic, then you find that they have peace of mind as a core value. So whatever they do, the intention is to provide peace of mind. Yeah? So from a passenger perspective, it means that when you get on board a Virgin Atlantic flight, your flight will depart on time, you will get to your destination with your luggage, you will have an enjoyable flight, and when you get off the plane, you will have good memories. from an employee and a partner perspective, peace of mind means that the company is financially stable, and therefore you don't need to worry about, will I be able to pay the mortgage at the end of the month? Will I be able to take care of my family? Those concerns are taken away, which means you can focus your attention and your energy and your passion and your time and all the other good things on doing your job well. So when you have the opportunity or ever get the chance to visit Virgin Atlantic at their headquarters in Crawley, you'll find that on a fairly regular basis, they engage in role-based crisis management simulations. War games. They don't call them that. They call it crisis management simulations. And they use it either to train people in when we have a particular crisis or emergency, this is how you can go about it, or for particular novel ones. And they pick them out of history and they borrow them from the competitors. They create their own ones to rehearse how they could respond to it. And they do fail now and then as well. It's not like there are some of the examples mentioned this morning. You know, it's all conformity. We know how to do things. When you now look at a different company, check your Land Rover, you see the exact same thing. If you go to their headquarters up in Coventry, you very often hear in the corridors and in meeting rooms, what if? What would happen if? Yeah? And these questions are being asked by managers and executives. Yeah? Now, essentially, those are the questions you explore in a war game. Again, they don't call it war game, they call it risk management. And what I have up here on this slide is an example of one of the questions they raised about 2 years ago. If you look at Jaguar Land Rover, they're doing incredibly well in comparison with only a few years ago. And one of the reasons they're doing so incredibly well is that the Land Rover and the Range Rover models are absolutely loved in China. 40% of the sales of the vehicles are going to China. Now, the topic or the issue explored here all had to do with fuel duty and essentially with about emissions. Now, when you look at Europe and you look at North America, obviously they also have emission and fuel duty policies. But they tend to be announced 12 to even 24 months ahead of time. So car manufacturers get at least a year, if not 2 years' time, to adapt their models to new policies and regulations. Not in China. China doesn't have a national policy where they deal with fuel duty and emissions. Big cities decided on their own account, and then they will announce it often a couple of weeks in advance. Now, when you now look at producing a car somewhere in Coventry or in Birmingham and then shipping it to China, that may take 4 to 6 weeks. So now you have the issue that when your car is, you know, such in transit from somewhere in England over to China, and the Chinese city where you're trying to ship the car to all of a sudden changes its policy, it means that perhaps you can't even import the car because it doesn't meet regulations, which means the car stays on your books. Now, as you all know, Jaguars and Land Rovers are very expensive vehicles, which means an expensive vehicle remains on your book, and it's a cost. And of course, it's their intention to turn it into revenue, which only happens when you can hand over the key to the new owner. So how do you do it when all of a sudden an emerging economy says, we're going to change the rules of the game? Essentially what they did up in Coventry is just they got people from different functions together and said, what if that were to happen? What would it mean to us? And what could we do about it so that it's in our advantage? Yeah, so here your opponent is essentially the Chinese government or the local government. And as a result of those discussions, they figured out they needed to improve their strategic early warning capability. They needed to have the ability to notice far sooner than they were doing at that time that changes were happening in their environment. And at the same time, they also recognized we need to come up with a capability that will allow us that as soon as we figured out that a car that's on its way to a market where we can't import it, then we can divert it to a different market where we can sell it. And as a result of that, they've been able to save themselves a lot of money. So now we come to the second bit. Interest. You can be aware of new ideas and new concepts, but it doesn't mean you'll automatically pay attention to them. I see a lot of men in the audience, and you know, safe assumption, undoubtedly most of you are aware of the fact that things like feminine hygiene products exist. Fair assumption. Do you pay any attention to them? No. And the reason is they're not personally relevant or meaningful to you. We'll only pay attention to things that are personally relevant and meaningful to us. Now, when we have found something that all of a sudden become aware of, and it is interesting to us, and we decide to spend some time and perhaps energy or even money to learn more about it, the very first thing we are not interested in are the mechanics of the concepts. Yeah, so when it comes to wargaming, in the very first instance, we don't care about how you wargame. What we want to find out in the very first instance is, why should this matter to me? And if it matters to me, what's in it for me? How is this concept, this idea, this product going to improve my life? And only when that leads to a positive answer will we take it to the next step. Okay? Now, at that stage, we come to the evaluation. So if we say, look, this looks interesting, I want to know more, then what are we going to decide? Am I going to go further with this idea? Or do I decide I'm going to reject it? Now, when we reach this stage, essentially what we do, we seek answers to 5 questions. And we ask those questions essentially subconsciously. The first question is all about relative advantage. So essentially what we want to know is how much better, relatively speaking, is this new idea versus the ones I'm already familiar with? Yeah, so when it comes to wargaming, when you go to business and perhaps a risk management professional is, look, I've got wargaming here for you, they will ask themselves, how much better is wargaming than all the techniques I'm already familiar with? Yeah? And then the second question to this is they want to know, right, okay, so if it offers benefits, how high are the costs of adopting this process and perhaps the cost of switching away from another approach I'm already familiar with? Now, the thing with wargaming is wargaming comes in all kinds of different shapes and sizes. So it is not that easy at this point to say it is positive or what have you. This needs to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. Yeah, and on a case-by-case basis, you need to compare it with risk management techniques that are out there. The second one is about compatibility. And essentially, that's the question about, right, I may like this particular idea, but how easy is it to fit it in my current way of working? Now, as I mentioned, a number of the wargaming techniques that could be applied in business, they share a lot of similarities with risk management techniques that are out there. So when you go to a risk professional, for example, the ones at Jaguar Land Rover, they will spend a month to collect all kinds of environmental information that will help them with the strategic decisions. Well, if you do a high-level wargaming with high-level, I mean at the strategic level, you will also need to collect that kind of information. So they're already in the mindset that we're willing to do that, and we already do it anyway. So on this point, probably not too many issues to deal with. Like, okay. Third one, simplicity. Essentially, in general, the simpler a concept is to use, the more likely it is that it will be adopted. Now, and of course, this is where wargaming can face some challenges. If you've ever done a full-on war game, it will have taken weeks, and then the next thing that you have to do is it may take one day or perhaps a couple of days to work your way through a number of decision cycles. You probably need a number of teams heavily involved in this. And of course, that's difficult. It's also quite expensive. So in this case, then to kind of enhance the rate at which the concept could be adopted, the focus should be more on the simpler variants of wargaming rather than the full comprehensive ones. So perhaps at the lowest level, it's just starting with, let's ask the what if question a little bit more often. Or perhaps let's start with something basic. We spoke about it this morning. Let's use concept of course of action wargaming. And let's apply that logic to projects. Let's apply some of these questions to a project and see what we learned from that. And given that 80% of projects fail to deliver the benefits, it's a fertile field to give it a go. Next thing, trialability. In general, we like to try before we buy, particularly when we have to spend a lot. Yeah, then we really think about it and we want to try it out first. Again, with a full-on war game, you can't just try that out. As I just said, often it may take weeks of preparatory work and then it may take one or a couple of days of running through your decision cycles. It may require a number of teams of managers, of senior executives. You don't exactly trial that out. And even getting a number of executives in the same room is quite a challenge. So what we have to do here is, again, come up with a simpler variant of wargaming. Now, ideally, something like a light version that you can just give someone and say, over a cup of coffee with your colleagues, why don't you give it a shot and apply it to one of your current issues? Yeah, because then the threshold is almost as low as possible, and they can try it out without the need of external facilitators. Last point is about observability. And this is essentially about how easy is it for other people to see you wargame, and what is it that they think about you when they see you wargaming, and the other way around. Yeah, so when you see other people wargaming, you know, how easy is that? And when you do see other people wargaming, what is it that you think about them? Now, all touchy-feely. Why? As human beings, we're social animals. And because we're social animals, we care a lot about looking good and being appreciated by others. So when it now comes to the adoption of one of those weird concepts like wargaming, what is it that others think about it? Yeah, how do they perceive it? What's their opinion about it? Yeah? Now, often what you find here is organizational culture or particularly influential individuals' attitudes towards experimentation and even failure. Now, those factors that play a big role in people's willingness to take a concept to the next stage and adopt it. So how can we now kind of, you know, make the leap and you know, cross the chasm so that next year we can welcome more people, be it in the military or business, to this conference? You know, how do we make that happen? I think we need to do three things. The first is we need to make the approach or the concept of wargaming personally relevant and meaningful to people. So when we talk about it, focus on the benefits of the approach and show people, not tell them, show them how it will improve their life. Only second, start to talk about the mechanics. Military speak, it's hearts first, so the benefits and then the mind, not the other way around. In business, we only do mind, we don't do heart, because that means they're not soft and hugging trees, so we're not into them. But we should. Yeah, that's how your brain is wired, but that's a different story. Now, the next thing is we have to make it accessible to people. Yeah, so we have to come up with a very easy way for people to quickly try it out for themselves and on their own accord see why wargaming is good for them. Yeah? Because if it's too much hassle or if the benefits only materialize too far into the future, people won't be motivated to make wargaming a habit. Yeah? So we need to lower the threshold and make it easy for people to just explore it for themselves. And then the third thing I think we need to do is share our success stories a whole lot more and far wider, just to increase awareness and interest amongst people. Thank you.